Welcome to Speak Up, Speak Out, progressive voices from around the valley and around the nation, conversing about issues important to our community. Welcome to Speak Up, Speak Out. Today, we're talking with Victor Clark Alfaro, who is a native of Tijuana. He has his MA in social anthropology from the Ibero-American University in Mexico City, and he's done some studies in sociology at University of California, San Diego. He is in Bellingham right now and going to be speaking at Western Washington University. He has been involved in a variety of issues right in the border, and Victor, you have started a nonprofit. What is the name of your nonprofit?
Binational Center for Human Rights. We opened this office in January 1987.
And what does this center do?
Well, it is one of the oldest human rights offices in our country. It's probably one of the first in the north part of Mexico. And we focus all of our attention in vulnerable groups. Since those years and before, we were working with migrants, in particular with Indian migrants from Oaxaca, and also by the beginning of the 90s, with inmates at a state prison in Tijuana, with sex workers, with the transgender community. And the purpose is not only to document abuses, of course, but to foster the organization of these groups. And that's what we have been done for years. They are already organized, and we play the role of advisors and obviously public defend them in many issues. But migration has been an important part for our center.
And today you just participated in part of the Farm Worker Solidarity March here in Skagit County. Are very aware of immigration issues if you've been dealing with migration right at the border. Let me ask you what you see as happening in the United States. You're from Mexico. Mm-hmm. You've got that perspective. First of all, do you see immigration reform happening in the U.S.?
Well, I think that what happened in Arizona last week, this new Arizona law, if you see if you try to see the positive thing that this law will have, I think that it put on the center of the discussion the issue of migration.
It did. It changed the dynamics.
Yeah, and I think this is very positive. But also, I think it's going to accelerate the process of migration reform, and I think that's positive. But also, from the another point of view, I think it's insane. I think it's against human rights. I think the response of our government, it has three ways to respond. The media, the diplomatic media, also via, and the legal way to respond. But until now, the Mexican government have not respond on the legal wait, because you can take these cases probably to international organizations. There are different organizations, international human rights organizations, okay, that you can take these cases. And also, there are response from human rights groups on the Mexican side of the border. Obviously, Mexicans, we don't see with good eyes this kind of laws on the American side. But also, in the case of the Mexican government, I think there is a very cynical position because last week, Amnesty International just released a report on human rights about the conditions of Central Americans entering to our country. And it is well known
Into Mexico.
And it is well known the way the Mexican authorities treat them.
Treat the migrants that are coming from Central America up through Mexico generally on their way to the United States.
Yeah, so Amnesty International released a report and saying that this is a double discourse from the Mexican government because Mexican government is complaining because the condition of Mexican, in particular the law, Arizona. But it has happened the same for Central Americans who entered to our country through Chiapas. But also it is happening the same all along the border on the Mexican side to those Mexicans who are being deported on a daily basis to Tijuana or to Ciudad Juarez. When they are deported, soon they will be probably arrested by the municipal police.
Of Mexico.
Yeah, I'm talking about on the Mexican side.
In Tijuana Ciudad Juarez.
In Mexico, on the Mexican side, these Mexicans who before coming to to our country as this process of deportation. They were the second main income to Mexico. Oil is the first. But when they have this category of second main income, the government...
The remittances that people send back to their home country, to their family.
The government obviously is very happy because they are sending all this money. But when they have the category of deportee on the Mexican side, they don't have any more this category. They run the risk of being arrested by the municipal police because the way they look like. And also, it is not only that, because the municipal police all along the border, in this atmosphere of growing violence fostered by the organized crimes, the municipal police want to give the impression that they are fighting delinquency, arresting what at the end are going to be migrants. So, and they give this public impression that they are arresting delinquencies when in reality many of them are migrants.
And it it's a bit of a double jeopardy. They've right. been deported from the United States. They end up in Ciudad Juarez or Tijuana, and then they're harassed by the Mexican police.
Yeah, so it is the same that is going to happen in Arizona, the Arizona law. It is the same that is happening in Tijuana or in Ciudad Juarez or Nogales for years. These people are being arrested. And
let me back up just a little bit. Before we went on air, you were mentioning that you were in Chiapas when the Arizona law passed.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. What was said there?
Well, it was a meeting organized by a group of the United Nations and local government of Chiapas, together with human rights activists and academics and legislators. And we were there when it happened in this law passed in Arizona. But I was very surprised that only few of us make public comments on the meeting because there were no public statement from the whole group, including legislators.
Yet it was a human rights group that was gathered.
And yeah, to talk about human rights and migration.
And no comment came out of the
isolated comments, but probably I expect a declaration from important Mexican legislators who were
it
there.
It seems like it might be appropriate.
Yeah, of course, because it was a moment, but it seems that, I mean, we comment, of course, there were comments, but not a
nothing document. Official.
No, I mean, I don't know, it sounds strange that it hasn't happened.
Then let's move forward again, and tell me about what has been happening on the Mexican side of the border. Is this law change in Arizona change anything?
Probably, well, it is that happened days ago, but probably it will change, I don't know how much, but as you know, more than 45% of migrants that cross to the U.S., they cross through the area of the state of Sonora, Arizona. And probably if migrants hear that there is a new law in Arizona that punishes those who look like undocumented, probably
look like they're brown skin.
Probably coyotes or human smugglers and migrants probably are going to change the direction of the migration flow to the U.S. Probably there will be new areas to enter and to avoid Arizona. Probably there are new routes that are opening recently in New Mexico, trying to reach the U.S. side. Probably the stream of migrants flow of migrants, it probably is going to move in another direction. Probably, I don't know, I have to talk to human smugglers, probably they will charge more with the protest that there is.
They
no
tend
more.
To do that if there's any problem.
Probably they will charge more. I don't know. Let's see what happened. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it will have an immediate effect on the fact that still a lot of Mexicans are crossing to the U.S. side because there is a huge necessity for many of these people to reach what in the past used to be the American dream. I don't think it will affect, besides probably that some flow migrants will change directions. Besides that, the Mexican government already published a travel warning and want to have a boycott of in Arizona, but that will never function because we have so close ties with the U.S. side, and I cannot imagine people on the border, living on the border, not crossing to the U.S. side for cover their economic necessities or to buy it or to have commercial interchange. So at the end, I don't think it will have a real impact on the Mexican side.
What do you see, looking from the Mexican side, what do you see the impact of that law change in Arizona? It may not stand. Mm-hmm. There are going to be several objections to that legally.
Yes.
What do you see happening?
I don't think it is going to reproduce in other US, in border states in the U.S. side. Again, the Latino community and other communities, they go find a positive pretext to better organize themselves. I think at the end, in terms of costs and benefits, the benefits will be much more than what we see until the best days.
The benefits of the law?
No, the impact of that law that will... The impact of the fact that...
The pressure the law is going to put on the federal level.
No, but not only that, mm-hmm. the fact that it is a way to reorganize or better organize all the Latinos groups in the U.S. side, and also, as I mentioned before, to accelerate the process of immigration reform. And I have to say this because it's unofficial, but there are sectors on the Mexican side from the government that probably will prefer that migrants cross in the same way that until now they cross to keep the status quo of migration. It is a better position to have migrants cross from the doorstep, enter to the U.S. side without any regulation. Because if you have a migration reform, we will have quotas of Mexicans crossing to the U.S. side. I don't know, 300,000 or two. But what about the others who cannot enter to those quotas? But without quotas, without any migration reform, the cheap labor force just entered to the U.S. side with no problem.
They've always found a way.
The way, and there is no, the Mexican government doesn't have to sign any agreement. And they send $21 billion last year to our country in the remittances. So it is a more easily positioned to have this labor force go and beg, send this money, than it seems to have quotas. But obviously, the cost of having all these Mexicans died, one or two per day, all along the border daily, in a different perspective, obviously, it's terrible. I mean, to hear all these histories, especially on the border, every day, to see the fence in front of us, at least in Tijuana, you see the fence and you feel aggravated, knowing that you have this partnership with the U.S., we have been neighbors. And actually, on the border towns, we have excellent relations. San Diego, Tijuana, Nogales. We have the excellent relations that the political discourse is different from the Mexico City and Washington. But on the border, relations are just excellent.
Okay, you're listening to Speak Up, Speak Out. We are talking today with Victor Clark Alfaro, who is a native of Tijuana. He is the founder and director of the Binational Center for Human Rights in Tijuana and has had a lot of work with migration there. Victor, we were talking some about the changes in the Arizona law may or may not bring to what's happening, but you have some experience working with coyotes or human mm-hmm. smugglers. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that. What's going to happen and what have you seen over the years?
Well, the world of coyotes is very complex. There are two kinds of coyotes, those that work at a local level and those that work at the transnational level. When I mean transnational, I'm talking about big cartels of coyotes, people who bring Chinese to Baja California and then cross them to the U.S. side, people who until recently bring Russians to the border and cross them to the U.S. side.
Now, that's neither one of those or anything we hear about in the U.S. We don't hear about Russians or Chinese coming in through Mexico.
I know that. Yeah. Well, until recently, Brazilians, a lot of people from Brazil. But you have two levels of coyotes, the ones who work at those levels and those who work at a local level. I'm not the ones who work at a local level, but I have to say that I know these people because as a social anthropologist, I went to do field work around 20 years ago in order to know these people. And they end playing the role of informants to our Office of Human Rights because they are the real experts on migration, are not the academics, are not human rights activists who have a lot of interest, but they are the real experts on migrations. And
they're the ones with the hands-on experience.
Right, they're the ones who cross people. They don't have scientific methods to measure migration, but they have a lot of information. And so they give us information about human rights violations from the police on the border.
Which side of the border?
I'm talking about the Mexican side.
Okay.
And they give us all this information that is very important for us in order to put pressure on the Mexican authorities to stop the persecution of migrants. So there's a role that they play with us, and that's how I came to know the way and the mechanisms coyotes use to cross to the U.S. side. And in the case of the Arizona law, as I mentioned before, probably they will change the flow, they will move to other places, or probably they will increase their rates. And there are many ways to cross to the promised land. There are many ways to cross to the happiest place on earth that is just 3 hours from Tijuana, Disneyland, according to the publicity. And the coyotes, imagine a day without coyotes all along the border. Probably the number of Mexicans or migrants who will die on the desert will increase dramatically. So at the end, the coyotes became an evil necessity for migrants. The only way to cross to the U.S. side in this moment is to hire a coyote. That's why they become an important mechanism between the cheap labor force in our country or in Latin America or in migrants from other parts of the world and the corporations in the U.S. side, because these people are the ones who are bringing the best labor force to the U.S. side. Without them, many migrants will die on the American side, or probably some of them on the Mexican side. So they play this economic and social role between cheap labor force and the capital or the corporations, the field in the U.S. side, for instance. Even people who are coming to this area of Bellingham, and they play this role. That's why they are an evil necessity. Probably the coyotes or polleros or human smugglers or traficantes de indocumentados as a species will be in risk with the immigration reform. Because with the immigration reform...
So they're voting against it.
No. Probably
no, the coyotes.
Yeah, right, because with the immigration reform, if at the end will open doors for important quotas of Mexicans to the U.S. side, it is not going to be the end of coyotes, but it is going to diminish dramatically the number of coyotes because there will be no necessity or too much necessity, and probably a small number of Mexicans, I don't know the economic conditions, how it will develop, but less Mexicans, much less, will need a coyote to cross because the others will be crossing with legal permits. So probably we will see not the end of the species of coyotes as an animal, but I'm talking in a different way.
Economically, it'll change.
Right. But I don't know how it will develop and how many Mexicans are going to cross legally to the U.S. side. But these people, they play this role. I am very conscious that they are criminals because it's something against the law in the Mexican and the American side, that they are more criminalized in the U.S. side. But also, in the personal biography of many migrants, the coyotes are the heroes for many of these people. When you talk to migrants, I have talked for years with migrants, for many of them, the coyotes are the good guys of the picture. Because they are the ones who cross your family, your grandfather, your mother, your children to the U.S. side. So, but it is true that the other side of the coyotes. There are the good ones and the bad ones, and there are also many coyotes who take advantage of the migrants. They rob them, they rape them, women.
They leave them to die.
They leave them to die. There are people who are not real coyotes, and they cross the desert together with migrants without knowing the trails or the routes. So if at the border you don't know in whose hands you are in great danger, because you don't know if this is a coyote with a long-year experience or is something that yesterday he decided to become a coyote. And not only that, it is someone that used drugs and it is going to cross the desert without knowing nothing about it, or probably is linked to thieves and delinquency. But many migrants, they come to the border knowing to whom to look for, because they
they already know word of mouth when they get to the border who they need to look for.
In many villages in our, for instance, people from Oaxaca, that is the people that I have more relation with, there are many villages in Oaxaca that for years a coyote on the border or coyotes from their own community are being crossing their people to the U.S. side, so they know they're
so they've moved from Oaxaca up to the border area. They've learned the routes, and so they now are the couriers bringing people into the country.
So they are people who speak the same language, people from their own communities. You know that you can trust them. You can safely cross to the U.S. side. But there are coyotes who are migrants who come to the border without having these contacts. And it is very easy to find a coyote on the border. They are looking for you. Where in Tijuana, for instance, at the international airport, at the bus station, downtown, red light district, there are people who are looking for the clientele, and they approach you and offer you the service.
How does one know whether it's a good coyote or not? You've arrived at the border.
It's difficult to know if you don't have any contact. It is difficult to know because the coyotes, they will offer you the possibility to cross. There are certain rules, and if the migrant doesn't know the rules, you don't pay the coyote on the border. You pay the coyote when you arrive to Los Angeles, for instance. It is like a travel agency. Even they use, well, they didn't use, but according to my perspective, they use the same slogan, travel now and pay later, because you don't pay them in Tijuana. You pay them when you arrive to Los Angeles. And migration is being financed not by the migrants, but by the relatives in the U.S. side. The relatives in the U.S. side are the ones who are going to pay the coyote.
So they meet people on the U.S. side and pay off the coyote?
No.
No?
No, the mechanisms, you come to Tijuana, you hire a coyote. Usually many migrants, they have numbers of the relatives and phone numbers. So the coyote will call your relative in Los Angeles and will say, in Tijuana is your cousin, are you going to pay? And if the man or the woman on the other side of the phone will say yes, then the coyote will put from his pocket the money for food, transportation. He will invest and then cross, not one, but probably 20 or 10, depending on the level of organization of the coyote, take all these people to Los Angeles. And there is when he will collect the money. Among them, probably there are people who at the end doesn't have any money, their relatives in Los Angeles. And depending the kind of organizations of coyotes, there are coyotes who will return these people again to the border. There are others who will beat the migrant. There are other coyotes who will just let them free, because if they are crossing 20, charging $2,000, well, it's a lot of money, and they will consider a loss in their business because it will happen occasionally. So depending on the coyote, how they will act, depending. But the fact is that crossing the border to the U.S. side is relatively easy, as in the past, although all the paraphernalia of the technology and more than 20,000 border patrols or customs and officials all along the border.
It's still easy.
I mean, relatively easy,
okay.
But the fact is that the labor force is crossing to the U.S. side. I mean, the fence doesn't stop. In Tijuana, San Isidro, we have triple fence. The American government just invest close to $70 million, and the area is totally it was totally sealed with one fence. But recently, they built 3.5 miles of another double fence. So we have triple fence on that part of the border, and it sounds crazy because it's the money that comes from the American society. I don't know. We don't understand the reason of having triple fence in this part of the border, because already with one fence and all the technology in the border patrol was very difficult to cross in that part. That's why people moved to Arizona. But although all these conditions, migrants are crossing to the U.S. side because of necessity, obviously, and because the expertise of these human smugglers to cross people to the U.S.
And people know that there are jobs here. And as someone said when they started fortifying the southern border more, you build a 10-foot fence, or you're going to find somebody that's got an 11-foot ladder.
It happened in Tijuana. In Tijuana, the coyotes rent ladders for $35, and then they jump to the other side. Yes.
So
yeah, because the mechanisms to cross are you have a menu of a whole variety of ways to crossing to cross the ways to you can cross in front of the custom if you have $4,000.
So you're just paying off the custom officer.
No, you pay the coyote, and the coyote. Well, there are different ways. Not the custom, but probably there are levels of corruptions also on the U.S. side.
Yeah, there have been some noted.
In this moment, more than 100 customs are under investigation because their relation with drug traffickers or human smugglers, because it happened. It gives the impression that corruption is only on the south, I mean on the Mexican side, but here we have examples of corrupted authorities linked to all these people.
We have been talking with Victor Clark Alfaro, founder and director of the Binational Center for Human Rights in Tijuana, Mexico. Victor, thank you very much for joining us today on Speak Up, Speak Out, and providing us some Mexican perspective on what's happening on the border and with migration. Thank you very much for being here today.
Join us each week for Speak Up, Speak Out. Archives are at speakupspeakoutradio.org. Theme music courtesy of Kurt Crandall. Until next time, seek peace, work for justice, celebrate diversity, and support your neighbors.
This program was produced in the studios of KSVR-FM by the Speak Up, Speak Out Collective. Distribution was made possible in part by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.